say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Thursday edition, July 19th, 2007 of The American Awakening. I'm your host, Michael Herzog, and I will be with you for the next 2 hours. I got what I think is a great show today. I'm going to forego my announcements to go into this gentleman's bio. The only announcement I'm going to make for all the listeners out there is go into YouTube and type in Bionic Burger. And watch that 3.5-minute clip. We had Dr. Rima LeBeau on my show yesterday. And I'll tell you what, I went in after the show and I watched that. I'll never buy another fast food hamburger again, folks. So if you want to continue to buy fast food, don't watch it. If you do want to buy fast food, you better watch this video. My guest coming up today is none other than a pilot for 9/11 Truth, of which I am a member as well. This fellow, his father, Bill Lear, invented the Lear jet. His name is John Lear. He's an accomplished former pilot, well-known ufologist. He is the son of the aviation pioneer Bill Lear for the Lear Jet Corporation. John Lear is now retired from flying. He's massed over 19,000 hours of flight time and has flown in over 100 different types of airplanes in 60 different countries around the world. He flew both commercially and in missions worldwide for the CIA. John Lear is the only pilot to hold every airman certificate issued by the FAA and has held many world records. Now, I want to mention, the first hour we're going to talk about 9/11, we're going to get it from a pilot's perspective. The second hour, we're going to talk a little bit further about our current space administration, NASA, the space program, and how it may just be a diversion. Now, I want to mention that all of the thoughts that John Lear gives in the second hour are his opinion. He is well-researched. He's gone down the proverbial rabbit hole on these issues. He's talked to many different people in the field. He has a lot of documentation, a lot of evidence to this. But I want to put a disclaimer up. Now, remember, he is a member of Pilots for 9/11 Truth, but second hour, we're going to get beyond the scope of Pilots for 9/11 Truth, and I want to make sure that what he says that all of the listeners know is not necessarily the opinion of Pilots for 9/11 Truth. So with that, let me say that John Lear claims to have always had a slight interest in UFOs and space travel. Sometimes in the mid-80s, he read the book Missing Time by Bud Hopkins, a book on alien abduction, and this was to become a turning point. From then, John began heavily researching the subject, including tracking down and interviewing many witnesses and individuals involved in the phenomenon. And soon later, in about 1987 or 88, John Lear began writing and lecturing on the subject. In the summer of 88, he met a physicist named Bob Lazar and soon became intimately involved in the Area 51 S4 story. It was claimed that Lazar worked at the S4 test site approximately 10 miles south of Area 51 and from December of 88 to March of 89, where he took part in the reverse engineering of extraterrestrial craft. During this time, Lazar relayed information to Lear about his alleged activities and experiences there. And during this time, both Lear and Lazar claimed that they were able to acquire a piece of the fuel that powered the craft, element 115, conducting several experiments that proved the high gravitational attraction and heaviness of the element, among other things, though apparently this evidence was stolen back. Around March of 89, Bob Lazar, John Lear, Gene Huff, and others organized several trips into the desert to view test flights from a distance. On one of these excursions, Lear claims to have witnessed a glowing yellow-orange disc-shaped object that rose above the mountains at Groom Lake. When I get back from the break, I'm going to bring up my guest, John Lear. I hope you give him a warm welcome. I'm very excited to have this guy on my show. We'll be back in 3. Stick around. This is going to be a good one, folks.
All right, we're back. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. And, yes, we're running down the road today, folks. We're going to loosen some loads here and find out some information that has been disseminated out to portions of the public, but it needs to be a bit wider spread. Now, the first hour, we're going to go into some events surrounding 9/11, and I'm going to get it from an expert, knowledgeable, and long-time, long-experienced pilot who has every FAA certification known to mankind. Great respect for this gentleman, me being a pilot as well. But the second hour we're going to spend on talking about the space program as a whole and some of the research that John Lear has done into the possibility of UFOs and the possibility of moon bases and the possibility that our space program is nothing more than a diversion. So with that, I'm going to bring up my special guest, and I'm so happy to have him. John Lear, are you with me?
Yeah, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, sir. I was just reading through your bio, and I'll tell you what, it would take me a half an hour just to go through all the accomplishments that you've made, and I want to commend you for what you've done, and I respect you so much as a fellow pilot, sir. I wanted to go into, in the first hour, John, from your perspective, being a professional pilot and flying for years for United States at different airlines in this country, from the 9/11 point of view of a pilot, John, I wanted to ask you a few questions and get your take on it, since you've sat in the left seat. I believe you've sat in the pilot seat of a 757, am I right?
No, I flew the L-1011 and the DC-8 and 707, but I never flew the Boeing 757.
Okay. Well, tell me, from your perspective, I mean, the planes are similar as far as weight and as far as the layout for passengers and so forth. The story about giving up the cockpit, John, to so-called 19 hijackers with box cutters, give us your take on that. How realistic is a story like that?
Not realistic at all. There's no possible way it could happen. The only pilot that that I've really researched is Chick Burlingame. He was the pilot on the American Airlines Flight 77 that allegedly crashed into the Pentagon. And this guy was ex-Navy, Top Gun. There's no way he was going to give up the the cockpit, and neither would any of the other pilots. I mean, it didn't happen. It was a ruse. It did not happen.
In your estimation, John, based upon the story that you got, the quote official story, I'm sure that at some point in time you've sat yourself in their situation and derived your own conclusion as what you thought possibly could have happened. Have you got any thoughts on that?
You mean as far as the airplanes in 9/11?
Yes.
Well, the ones that allegedly hit the World Trade Center, the original airplanes that took off from the airport were switched with probably Air Force Boeing 757-dash or 767-300s that were equipped with automatic flight controls. In other words, they could be flown from another airplane or another command post to hit the World Trade Center. The story that Arab hijackers were able to hit the World Trade Center is totally fiction. There's no possible way it could happen. I've flown many hours, hundreds of hours, and trained many hundreds of pilots. And we during training, we used New York because of the different approaches to JFK. They have ILS, DME, NDB, visual approaches, and so you can go to one approach right into the other in training. And when the training's done, we always have a little fun. We always take off and fly around the World Trade Center and knife edge through the World Trade Center. I mean, all pilots do it, and there's no denying it. It's fun to do, you know. So having done that, you know, I know that that it would be impossible for an Arab hijacker, first time in the airplane, or even with training, to approach the World Trade Center at 600 miles an hour and hit the building. It cannot happen. It would not happen. There's just not enough technical expertise in the pilot to do it. I don't think that I could do it. As a matter of fact, I've always wanted to go. I live in Las Vegas, and there's a 757 simulator here, and I've always wanted to go down and try it. Approach the World Trade Center at 600 miles an hour and see if I could hit a dead center. I don't think I could. Now, I'm pretty accomplished. I've got 19,000 hours. I've done a lot of precision flying. I've got 600 hours of formation flying. I've done a lot of aerial drops. I've done a lot of close aerial photography work. So I have a lot of experience. And so I'd like to see if I could hit the World Trade Center. Maybe I could, maybe I couldn't. But the fact is, no Arab hijacker could. It's just impossible. It couldn't happen.
Well, in order to have done that, from the perspective of the approach that they had, they would have had to have been actually looking out the window, looking out the cockpit window in the approach. I mean, they're certainly not going to set it up on an ILS or something. So, you know, and my limited experience in aircraft, I've flown 210s and twin air commanders and so forth, and of course they're nowhere near as fast as a 757. But I have been in the cockpit of a 757, and I have visualized, you know, looking out the window at 500 miles an hour, and I couldn't foresee being able to pull off such a maneuver like that, flying by the seat of my pants, if you will. But let's go on here a minute. I wanted to speak for a minute with you about the transponder issue. Now, the official story is that they had shut off the transponders and deviated off course. And when an individual does that, in my experience with the FAA, if a transponder is turned off and a pilot deviates off course, within 10 minutes, there's a call to NORAD, and there's a couple of F-16 fighters that are launched. That's correct, right?
They what?
I said within 10 minutes of turning a transponder off and veering off course on a instrument flight plan.
Much less than that. I think they had, what did they have, Payne Stewart in about 5 minutes?
Well, they had the F-16s on his tail. I was giving him the benefit of the doubt. But within, I believe, about 12 minutes, they had fighters on the tail of Payne Stewart. But at any rate, if you veer off course, you turn off a transponder on an instrument flight path, the procedure is to call NORAD. I would think within 3 to 4 minutes, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and so with that, and the stand down was, I believe that there was, what it was, it 88 minutes before there was an interception there, or even close to an interception.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the theory that the transponders were turned off, and well, let's put it this way: in order for the United States government to let this happen, somebody had to do something. They had to create a stand-down order, because if they would have had done nothing, then it would have been automatic that F-16s would have been on their tail.
Right.
Right. And so they were running drills that day, and that's literally their excuse for it. But at any rate, if nothing was done, then these planes would have been intercepted long before they hit the Pentagon, or long before they hit the World Trade Center. I want to touch with you a little bit in your experience on the cell phone issue. Have you ever tried to use the cell phone in the cockpit of a jet?
Yeah, I haven't been successful. I think early in the program, when cell phones first came out, you could do it. But because the cell phones were tying up too many cells, they put the antennas so that you couldn't reach them from the air. I believe that's how it happened. But as far as the cell phones from the airplane, that's totally bogus. We have the American Airlines maintenance manual that says the cell phones in their 757s were deactivated in January of 2001, so all those things were deactivated, or the seatbelt phones. So that would have only left the cell phones. And the cell phones at the time the calls were made at the particular altitude and speed, it could not have happened. So most, if not all, of the cell phone calls that we were told about were bogus.
So that pretty much knocks Ted Olson's statement into a cocked hat.
Oh, absolutely. That's the worst one. I mean, there's no possibility that that particular cell phone call could have happened.
Okay. Now, the there's also a rumor flying around, and I use that term loosely, that Flight 93 was shot down and didn't crash. All right, I mean, it crashed, but it was shot down and didn't crash by virtue of the hijackers. What's your take on that?
Well, there's no wreckage that I've ever seen of Flight 93 crashing. The hole that they showed you in Shanksville, there's absolutely no possibility that an airplane crashed there. I've investigated crashes myself. I've built airplanes. I've flown them. I'm extremely familiar with accidents and accident investigation, particularly in large airplanes. And that smoking hole they showed you, it's just absolutely, totally impossible that a Boeing 757 crashed there. There would have been far more pieces. I think they had a backhoe digging up some kind of an engine there or a piece of a wheel. I forget what it was, but it was totally bogus. No airplane crashed there. I think the coroner was there 20 minutes, and when he left, his statement was, there's no sense of me staying around here because there are no bodies. And so Flight 93 was totally a sham. It was bogus. It didn't crash. I don't know where it went, but it
certainly
didn't crash.
Okay, John, let me stop you there. We've got to take a break. We'll be back in three. Stick with me. My guest is John Lear. We got more great stuff coming up. We're back. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona, with my special, very knowledgeable, and very experienced guest, John Lear, who was a pilot for many, many years, flew for several airlines. Also, you made a few runs for the CIA. Is that correct, John?
Over a period of 17 years, between 1966 and 1983, I did a couple of things for them.
Okay. Well, let's get back to where we were. Now, according to your perspective, it didn't crash there. You think that they just took a backhoe and made a hole, or is there a possibility that a missile could have crashed there?
No, what they probably did is set off some explosives there to make that hole. I doubt if there was a missile, there would have been some parts from the missile there, and there was essentially nothing. There was no wreckage that I could see, and it was a very small hole.
And they literally found, and I'm going from memory here, John, so bear with me, they literally found nothing. No blood, no body parts, no wreckage, no nothing.
No, as I say, the local coroner came around for about 15 minutes. He said, there's no point in me staying here because there are no bodies.
Right, and now the actual wreckage, though, was thrown out over, what was it, about 8 miles?
Now, what was that again?
I said the actual wreckage, the pieces that they did find were scattered at over approximately
about 8 miles away. I think there was some seats and seat backs and stuff like that.
Which would lead an intelligent, critical-thinking individual to draw the conclusion that it was blown up by a missile or shot down.
Yeah, that's what I thought in the beginning, that it might have been my sources said it was shot down. And so probably, you know, the theory was that when they started shooting at the airplane, some of the stuff came off about 8 miles away and then it crashed. But when I saw the actual wreckage or what was supposed to be the crash area, I realized that no airplane crashed there. And whatever came off 8 miles before was probably put there by someone.
Which brings me next to the hit on the Pentagon. Now, I watched mainstream news, and by the way, when this happened, I was another dumbed-down Fox News-watching American that didn't have a clue what was going on. But I did find it curious that some of these government officials that were running around on the penthouse lawn picking up pieces, there were very few pieces to pick up, and the pieces that they did pick up were very strange looking, and it didn't really look like they fit a Boeing 757. The hole that was supposedly made into the Pentagon was, I believe, what, about 16 feet wide?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they immediately covered the grass with dirt.
the entire lawn with dirt shortly after the crash. Now, you've reviewed the videotape on Pilots for 9/11, and the trajectory of the approach from Flight 77 into the Pentagon conflicts with the official NTSB report. So, in your estimation, what hit the Pentagon, John?
Well, first of all, with all due respect to everybody who's looked at this, investigated, and what they think, there was no Boeing 757 that crashed into the Pentagon. It did not happen. It could not happen. There was not enough wreckage. Boeing 757 absolutely, positively did not crash into the Pentagon. It didn't happen. Whatever the reason that the government pulled off this ruse, whoever pulled it off, they made some very serious mistakes and misjudgments of the intelligence of the American public. But the bottom line is no Boeing 757 crashed into the Pentagon. As far as the flight recorder tape, the tabular data, I've looked at that for hundreds of hours, not hundreds of hours, but for tens of hours, and there's just things that don't make sense. If I had to sum it up in 25 words or less, I'd say, look, that flight data recorder information was probably, that flight was flown at a different place at a different time, and then they took that data, flight recorder, and then they gave it to whoever was going to investigate the Pentagon crash and said, here, we got that out of the airplane. But there's so many things that don't make sense in that tabular data from the flight data recorder that somebody made some serious errors in judgment. You know, the biggest one, of course, was the altitude of the airplane as it crashed into the Pentagon. In the flight data recorder, it says 70 feet. Well, the actual altitude of the Pentagon, I think, is 33 feet, and that's okay. There could be that kind of an error. But what they didn't know, in particular, it was not the NTSB, not the National Transportation Safety Board, that did the investigation. Excuse me. That flight data was given to the FBI, and the FBI did it.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever made that tape, and if they phonied it up, they made an error and put 70 feet. What they didn't know is that flight data recorders record the altitude of the aircraft from a standard barometric pressure setting of 2992 inches of mercury, not the altitude of the airplane. Both altimeters of both pilots are set to local barometric pressure, and those indications are recorded by the flight data recorder. But the actual altitude of the airplane is recorded from standard 2992, and the reason that they do that is so that if an airplane crashes, they can go back and extrapolate that data taken at 2992 with whatever was set on the altimeter and determine exactly what altitude the airplane was when it crashed.
Let me stop you right there, John. We've got to take a break. Be back in 3, and we'll have a long segment come up to chat here. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my guest, John Lear. Be right back. Stick with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
We're back. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. And I have my special guest on the line, John Lear. And before I go back to my guest, phone lines are open for this half hour because we're going to go into a different subject content in the second hour. 800-313-9443. If you have a question for my distinguished guest, John Lear, from a pilot's perspective of 9/11, feel free and give us a call. Okay, John, we're talking about the flight data recorder. Go ahead. I'm sorry for the break, but we got a long segment coming up here. Go ahead.
Okay, just let me wrap that up, that the flight data recorder said that the altitude that the airplane crashed at was 70 feet. Since the flight data recorder records at 2992, that means if you extrapolate those altitudes, that the airplane was at 400 feet when it hit the Pentagon, which means it didn't hit the Pentagon. So somebody is fooling around with the data or whatever, but no airplane, no 757 ever hit the Pentagon.
Okay, and then we have these eyewitnesses. And what I found fascinating, I ran across a recent 9/11 video here that I saw just a couple of weeks ago, John. And there was a, you know, as time goes on, people continue to bring out more and more and more evidence. And I happened to see this latest video. I can't even remember what the name of it is now. But they pointed out that the first seven supposed eyewitnesses to the incident itself, the North Towers, all happened to be major television news executives. And we recall during the first, the first few hours of these events, there were people coming forward, and we did see people mention the fact that it looked like a missile hit the Pentagon, and those reports mysteriously vanished, and then all we would see then is people talking about an airplane hitting it. In your estimation, what do you think happened to the planes, John?
The ones that took off?
The ones that originally took off. Now, let me back up a minute here, because I know that they had shown videotape in an airport of one of the hijackers, and I think it was Muhammad Atta. But what they didn't tell us is that particular video of Muhammad Atta at the airport wasn't that airport. It wasn't Boston. It was in Maine, I believe. They didn't tell us that. But my question is, these four airplanes, and I'm talking about from your perspective, because I realize, John, that you like the rest of us, you don't know for sure, but I'm asking from a pilot's perspective, and also having some experience with the CIA, and you've done some pretty serious investigation on government activities and so forth. From your perspective, what do you think happened to those airplanes that took off that day?
All those airplanes are somewhere else. They didn't crash, and all those passengers are alive. Now, I know that irritates a lot of people, but I believe that to be true. Nobody in any of those airplanes got killed. All the airplanes were switched. A lot of the passengers were military, not all of them. Most of them were associated, military or associated with the military. So all of the airplanes, they didn't crash. The only two airplanes that did crash or may have crashed were the ones at the World Trade Center, Boeing, Pentagon and the Shanksville airplane. No, there was nothing that crashed there.
Well, it's interesting that you brought that up, John, because I did, through the course of my research, and of course, like you, I've been doing, bits and pieces over the years, but I did happen to get my hands on a flight list, and curiously that there was a less than normal amount of people on those flights that day, but on one specific flight, and I'm not sure which one it was, I seemed to run across enormous amount of people, and I'm talking about better than 50% of these people that worked for Raytheon, DynCorp. This was their occupations, okay? The large majority of them seems to be defense contractors or government officials. Did you run?
It was all, go ahead. It was all set up, Mike. It was all set up. None of those guys got killed. The real question is, why did they do it? You just can't get a bunch of people involved in a program like that without having given them a good reason. There had to be a good reason to phony up 9/11. I don't have the slightest idea what it was, but they had to tell all those people to get that many people to go on along with it. They had to take them into a briefing, and there had to be some really, really good reason why they had to phony up 9/11 and actually pull it off and kill those many people and destroy that building. They had to give the rest of those people a good reason, and I can't even fathom what that reason might have been.
Okay, in your estimation, and again, I'm just kibitzing back and forth with you and getting your perceptions, because obviously this is only people's opinion. In your estimation, do you believe that some or all of these people are still walking around somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you think
are?
For instance,
I don't know whether you saw this story about Chick Burlingame. He was the captain of the Flight 77 one. There was a very, very mysterious thing here, and I can't remember whether it was a year or a couple of years ago, that his daughter was killed in a suspicious apartment fire. And the story is somehow that she either knew about it or somebody knew about it, and they had to get rid of her. But, yes, I know that irritates people in some way to say that they're all alive, And I know that some people will say, well, I had a friend, and he was a friend of a friend, and they, you know, his family lost him. Well, that may be, but I think all those people are alive.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I ran across that story as well, and that wasn't too long ago. And again, you know, we're just speculating. I've looked at this Nine Ways to Sunday, you know, for the past couple of years, and, you know, we weigh the evidence, and we look at what makes more sense, you know, what makes the most sense. It's kind of like Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is usually the truth. In your estimation, to pull something like this off, and you mentioned that you have no idea why. You know, I've read the PNAC documents, and I've read the Project for a New American Century, and obviously this thing was pre-planned. You know, there were think tanks, there were obviously, different agencies, CIA, ISI, and so forth, that had to have been involved in it. And I'm just curious, from your perspective, how many people you would think it would take to come up with a plan like this?
I don't know, but 9/11 was planned over about 10 years at least by the government, and they had to bring a lot of people into it. And, you know, I had dinner the other night with some very knowledgeable friends, very informed friends, nobody within the government or nobody with a secret clearance, and I gave them a figure. I said, how much do you think we know? And I said, let's assume that zero, we don't know anything about the government, nothing about what they're doing. Let's assign a number of 100 that we know everything. We all know all their secret space plans. We know their secret space platforms. We know that they've actually been to the stars. We know that they've been to every planet in the solar system. We know all that. I said, where do you think we are? And the consensus that we came up with was that the general public, and with us included, were at between 0.1 and 1 on a scale of 0 to 100.
Wow, then I was really going out on a limb here. I was going to say about 3% maybe, but it's not even that high.
Well, Mike, you know, I threw out at the beginning so that I wouldn't embarrass these people, and they said, no, we don't know that much. It's between 0.1 and 1.
And, you know, through my journey here, John, in waking up, and by the way, and I'm the first to admit, I only woke up a couple of years to go to all this, but what happens is as you waken and you find out that they're lying to you about 9/11, they're lying to you about the taxes, they're lying to you about literally everything, and what happens is, at least in my world, I have found myself going back and literally going through my history books and examining everything that they have ever told me about anything.
Absolutely.
And I find out that the overwhelming majority, if not all of it, are lies.
Yeah.
Which tells you that there's obviously a bigger agenda involved. You know, you said that this was planned over a period of about 10 years. Then, you know, they planned it, they trained these people, they, you know, faked their identities or whatever, because we know that there was no Arabs on this flight list at all. I've looked at the flight list. There's no Arab names on that flight list. You know, 7 or 8 of those hijackers are still alive. I mean, yes, the whole thing was well planned, but like anything of that complexity, there were flies in the ointment, and the truth is coming out at least to some of us. Well, listen, we've got Henry in Connecticut on the line. You want to take a call, John?
Sure.
All right, Henry in Connecticut, you're on with Michael.
Hello.
John. Go
okay.
Ahead.
Yeah, and also, if you pick up a book by a guy named Qasem Khalil, and I'm not into Islam at all, you know, one way or the other, actually, I'm pagan, actually, but he's very a good researcher. In his book, Wrongfully Blamed, he makes it clear it wasn't Arabs. Actually, it was Israelis. But I want to get back to the rocket. There were some people that actually sworn, not sworn, but were threatened, that they saw that freaking rocket hit that Pentagon. Also, what's interesting is that when it hit the section of the Pentagon pentagram, you know, all that symbol with that stuff that's over there in D.C., the Pentagon is down over in Virginia, right? Or Georgia?
Right. Well, Virginia, yeah.
Virginia, yeah. It's in Virginia. But it's near Maryland, okay. It hit the section where the NCOs, the non-commissioned officers, usually are staffed or work, you know, in that office. The places where the COs, the commission officers, or the higher-ranking generals, is another section that didn't get hit. There is that the area where it was hit was a lot of low-ranking, or maybe lieutenants, which are COs, and captains. But I mean, the top areas where the generals are, and four-star generals, and all that, they were in a different section. The other thing is supposed to be the most securest building in the world, blah, 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 but yet they never had they don't have anything on film or digital DVD or whatever that caught anything hitting the Pentagon. I thought that was kind of interesting. But there were people sworn. They saw the rocket. The surface to air, not air to, air to air or surface to air, but the actual, air to surface missile hit that Pentagon. It must have been fired from some kind of plane or some kind of high altitude plane or something. But there were people that did actually see that, and they were threatened by the FBI or something. So I've heard this from somewhere. I mean,
no doubt in my mind that that occurred. There's 72 cameras with films that we've not been allowed to see, and
then people that had it, and they took it away from the FBI, would take it from them, or whoever did have a film of it, they would. Even at a hotel or motel, I was some story with some woman or man, and the thing was taken from him.
Right, and the reason that part of the Pentagon was reinforced is they knew it was going to hit there, and they knew some people were going to be killed, but they didn't want it to get it into the rest of the Pentagon. So that's why that part was had just been reinforced.
Well, let me insert here, that particular part of the building that was hit was also the Office of Naval Intelligence, I believe. Am I right John?
I've heard that story, and I heard that there was somebody in that particular group that was on to what was going on, and that's why they got them. But, you know, I don't know. I don't have any. That's just a rumor.
Right, yeah, it's rumor.
You know, William Cooper worked in Office of Naval Intelligence. Also, Naval Intelligence, people keep talking about CIA, NCA, and the Army. The Navy, it's not the, even if it's something with that anti-gravity disc technology that they're trying to make us believe is aliens or whatever, it's not the Air Force that really got the good stuff. You know who really got the good stuff? They got all the real secrets? The Navy. Cooper told me that personally on the phone. We talked on the phone a while ago before he got, you know, killed.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, Henry, because that's we're going to talk about that subject matter in the second hour.
One thing I want you to remember here and to realize that day before 9/11 is when Donald Rumsfeld announced that the Pentagon had misplaced $3.2 billion.
Actually,
$3.2 trillion.
Right.
The Pentagon has $3.2 trillion that they could spend with whatever. Meanwhile, the rest of our country's infrastructure and everything else is becoming crap.
Well, in accordance with the military budget, you have to scratch your head in wonderment at where they got that money to begin with.
To the repairs after the freaking missile hits it. By the way, I know of somebody else who saw the freaking missile. I use freaking because we're in the air. The missile that hit the plane over in Long Island, over in New York, that rocket, that was a surface-to-air missile.
Well, you're talking about Flight 800, TWA. I think that there was, and not to get off track here, but I think there was close to 200 witnesses of that event, of which they have buried all of that testimony.
Yeah, they needed psychiatric help, and they needed this. Like what they do with our teenagers, you know, because they want to dye their hairs a certain color or like a certain band, you know, unlike the European countries like Switzerland and Germany and Iceland and a couple other places. By the way, I saw a survey, I thought America would be included, where they said the least freest country is Iraq or something, but the most freest country is Iceland, Denmark, and Sweden. So I said, well, how come America's not included in there somewhere? And I know about America sexually compared to some of those European countries, so okay, I can understand that part of it with all this religious BS we got here, but I was thinking it wasn't just something social like with sex. They said just the freest country overall. I just couldn't understand why America's not in there. No, they mentioned that. But they don't dope up their youth and all that with all that psychiatric and drugs and health and all that junk like they try to ram.
Henry, are you trying to convey, Henry, that America's not a free country?
Yes, I am. I also think it also has these older idiots who are 60, 70, 80 year olds or more. Not everybody now. Hear me. I'm not talking about everyone. Who are into all this Lucifer. Some of them into Christian stuff, too. I don't like either. But they're into all this religious stuff that we must evolve and come together as one root race with all these third world immigrants and have one world order. And that's our destiny and spiritual this for mankind. I heard William Cooper read all those books. He's into some of the religious stuff. Not their religion, but the religious stuff. I'm not, okay, at all, either side. But he read a lot of stuff I heard on the air. He would tell me about, you know, I was listening to him. This stuff is not just about money and greed and money. That's BS, Rockefeller and him. They don't need
it. All right, Henry, we're getting off topic a little bit here. All right, thanks. Listen,
nice talking to you.
Thank you, Henry. Let's go to Bruce in Omaha. Bruce, you're on with Michael and John. Go ahead.
Michael.
Hi.
Hello, Michael. Hello, John.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Being an old aerospace engineer and an ex-avionics tech from my Air Force days, have you ever been to the website physics911.net? There are some good timeline hypotheses in there and some good explanations of things in physics911.net. That's a very good website.
Okay. Have you been in there, John? I haven't been in there.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I've been in there.
Okay. Then the answer to the question is half of a yes. Yes for John, no for Michael. But I will go in and check it out because I always do.
Yeah, there's some good stuff on the bird that hit the Pentagon, which could have been an old A3D Skywire.
Okay, listen, you want me to hold you over? If you've got something
else,
I'll hold you over. All right, we'll go to a break. We'll be back in three. This is Michael Herzog, The American Awakening. Stick with us. We've got my special guest, John Lear, on the line, and we'll talk about the space program after the top of the hour. Stick with us. Arizona, and we've got my special guest John Lear on the line, and we've also got Bruce. And Bruce was telling us that there's some good stuff at physics911.net. Is it, Bruce? Bruce, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm speaking.
You say it was physics911.net, correct?
Right. Physics911.net. There are other good websites, but I can't remember them all right now. But that's
okay,
a good one to begin with.
You said that you were a former what, Bruce?
I was an avionics tech in the Air Force. I worked on radio radar nav aids. I worked on the big birds like 141s and 124s and B-52s, WB-47s and some 135s and stuff like that.
Okay, so you're an awake individual, though. You know what's going on behind 9/11,
I've
right?
been studying this for 25 years at least.
Okay. you didn't study 9/11 for 25 years because it just happened in 2001, but... let me ask you this, and then John, I have to tell you this, and I'm going to make a public statement right now. As far as your consensus that those planes weren't the same airplanes. Now, John, did you see? And I'm sure you have a lot of those videos where it looked like there was a pod underneath the wing hitting the north and the south tower.
Yeah, there was a pod.
Right, and this is why the whole time that I've looked at that, I said, well, there could never have been a pod that was on there when they were sitting on the runway or sitting, you know, loading passengers. So, John, I'm going on record, and I'm going to agree with you that it is my consensus as well that those people were not on that plane because it wasn't the plane. Now, where they're at, I don't know, okay,
correct.
But they weren't on the planes yet.
Mike, that's the biggest problem that people have with this is they could go along with all the rest of this, but unless you can explain what happened to the rest of the people, they're not buying it. And the same thing with my wife. So I can understand where they're at, but the fact is, you know, they're okay. And they were not on those airplanes.
Well, we all know, I mean, and Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, tell me whether you agree with this or not. It's pretty well a fact that we know a Boeing 757 didn't hit the Pentagon because it would have made
The engine nacelles would have dug into the lawn for the plane to have to get that low. It would have been in ground effect.
Right, and so with that means that if a 757 didn't hit the Pentagon, that means that the 757 that took off went somewhere else.
Probably. Now I want to talk about that a second. Dr. Richard Sauter, is it Underground Bases and Tunnels? And a couple books in that area, more underground bases and tunnels. They could be in some of those underground bases down in there hiding, being taken care of.
Well, I don't know whether
about
I would.
That.
I don't know if they were, and correct, tell me your thoughts on this, John. If they were, I wouldn't say that they were hiding. Because, again, I studied one of the passenger manifest lists, and there were a number of people on that list that were government people. They were also defense contracting people. So they may have moved them to another point in the world. They may be working for Halliburton in Dubai. We don't know.
They could be hiding on some island in the South Pacific, just the way supposedly we gave one of those islands in the South Pacific to some space aliens back in the late 50s or early 60s for their base of operations.
Well, we may touch on that subject next hour. Well, I'll tell you what. Again, my mind is so open, and my consciousness has been elevated to a point where nothing to me anymore is unbelievable. I have spent hours upon hours upon hours looking at research that John Lear has done, interviews that he has done. And I have to tell you, John, and I don't mean to blow your head up, but I am absolutely fascinated with some of the things that you have researched, and I'm looking at it very, very much deeper than I used to. So, got to go to the top of the hour. Bruce, I'll let you go here, buddy. Thanks for the input, okay? Okay, Michael Herzog, The American Awakening. Stay with us. We'll be back in two. Second hour coming up, we're going to talk about the space program and the fact that it just may be a diversion. My special guest, John Lear. Stick around. It gets better.